B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos. Dub.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
First time in like a month, first time in 2022, we're back, and better than ever. It's Gasper Murray here on 98.5, a sports hub, coming to you from the Town Fair Tire studio. Chris has been in the studio all of a minute and a half, and boy, the squawking's already begun.
It's true. It's true. And, you know, I have to say, it's not like I'm in a bad mood. I'm not. I'm just, you know, it's just, maybe it's the cold. Like, you know how the cold makes you just sort of grip? You know, you grip every muscle and tendon in your body. I think that sort of is translating to my mental state, you know, because I'm not in a bad mood. But, yeah, there are some things that are irking me.
Yeah, well, I mean, bitchiness comes quick when it's this cold and the snow's on the ground. It's already happened to me since I've been up. It's like I've had those why the hell do I live here moments.
Especially for you coming back from where you're coming back.
Oh, God. Yeah, no. That was, you know, so had an epiphany in Key West in my time off. At some point, like, I'm not, my dying days won't be here. I always thought, like, yeah, you know, I'll live and die in New England. No, eventually, like, I'm out.
You're going to be a snowbird, huh?
I'm not dealing with this.
Like, mean old man Murray the snowbird.
Yep.
Wow, you were going to be, like, the biggest New England cliche.
Oh, I am. That's so I never wanted to be the Florida cliche, like, yeah, going down to Florida. Yeah, I got a place down, got a place down the Keys. Got a friend over there in Bradenton, too. Yeah, I found a nice little place. I thought I would never be that. But after that week there, yeah, I'm good. Like, winter's just the worst. It's the worst. Why do I live here? Because of the job, because I love the job, and I love talking sports with my pal. And I did want to start with this because it was a conversation that came up on Felger and Maz this week. You and I well know, Chris, this is Wild Card Weekend. We should be getting prepared for what I think is one of the best weekends in sports, Wild Card Weekend. But instead, thanks to the new money-grabbing schedule, we still have another interminable week to get through before this slog of a season is over. Initially, when the season started, some of the games were really competitive. It was good, especially those primetime games. I was like, all right, wrong again. The NFL got it right. Regardless, they got me over a barrel. I'm going to keep watching. But as things went along, especially towards like midpoint of the season, where it became, I thought, glaringly obvious, there's really no strong teams. It was just one big gelatinous middle. Sometimes some teams look better than others. Green Bay, Kansas City goes on that run. Hell, the Patriots have a 7-game winning streak. But you knew deep down, like, wow, this is what they really wanted. Like, they got the parity that they have been seeking for the last couple of decades. It's finally come home to roost. And I think that extra game is part of it. I think that, Mike and I got into this argument. He's like, well, they haven't played the extra game yet. What are you talking about with all these injuries? Well, I know it's not, there's no statistic behind it. You can't quantify it, but it's just a gut feeling. And I don't think my eyes are lying to me. I do think what you've seen with this extra game is that players, you know, I try to put myself in the shoes of a player, and I do think as this thing has gone along here and they have to prepare themselves for this extra game, that some guys have mentally taken weeks off, that some guys have looked at certain games and said, I can half-ass this one because I need to be better prepared for a divisional game down the road, whether consciously or subconsciously. And that's why you get results like Jacksonville 9, Buffalo 6. That's why you get that Thursday night game where at the time the Dolphins, who were, I think it was the beginning of their winning streak, they were 1-7, and they kicked the bejesus out of Baltimore, who was good then, before Baltimore really was beat up and started to hit the skids. Like, there's been Dallas at home against the middling Broncos, and they get their ass kicked in that game after Dallas had been rolling. I think you get no-show games because of this extra game this year, and it's affected the product. I think the product is down. You know me, like, the NFL still has me over a barrel.
Yeah,
I'm going to keep
the
watching.
NFL, man.
But this year's been kind of the line in the sand for me where I've started to waver, where Thursday night games are on at my house, but they're mostly just background noise, and I'm not as invested as I have been in the past. I think the product suffered. I really do.
That's interesting, man. I got to say, it's, you know, back during the Vietnam War, I believe it was Lyndon Johnson who said, if I've lost Walter Cronkite, I've lost America. Yeah. Thursday night football, if you've lost Jim Murray, you've lost America. Because Jim Murray will watch any Thursday night matchup. So that is scary if you are the NFL. Yeah, I mean, I think, guys, it's natural, right? It's like if you know you're running a marathon, you pace yourself appropriately.
Yeah.
And so if the marathon gets extended and they add another mile or two, then you're going to adjust your pace. And I think we've seen some of that this year. I think obviously, you know, COVID doesn't help and just the impact of COVID and COVID absences. But you see some teams have just been decimated by injuries. A team like Baltimore, for example. And it does feel like guys have taken weeks off physically or mentally. I think you're going to see some of this, too, in week 18 here. Which starts, again, I sort of forgot about this, starts
games today.
Kansas City and Denver and the Eagles and the Cowboys. But already Cincinnati, for example, which still has the capability to move up in the seeding in the AFC, they're already telling you that Joe Burrow is not going to play, you know, because there's only that one bye. So I think even that shifted it as well. So, you know, you wonder sort of, look, we're always going to watch the games, but you wonder if they are nearing that inflection point that Mark Cuban talked about some years ago.
Yeah.
When he talked about it.
The pigs get fat.
Hogs get slaughtered. Yeah. You know, you wonder if we're sort of entering that point and how long can you, and the ratings are out of this world. I mean, I know Warren Sharp the other day tweeted out the ratings aren't down. People still watching the product, obviously. Ratings are not necessarily an indicator of the quality of the product. I think people will sometimes just watch stuff, you know, rotely or by habit. But I wonder if you are starting to get to a point where it is, you know, how much longer can the league pass off mediocrity as ooh, this is fun, exciting, unpredictable parody?
Yeah, and I just, it feels like with this additional game that they have reached the point of no return, or it's diminishing returns. And it feels like, and I, especially with COVID right now, too, it feels like to me, Chris, like the team that has the least amount of injuries and that can not succumb to COVID protocols is ultimately going to be there in the end and win this thing, at least for this year.
Yeah.
And that's not great. Like, I want the best team to win, you know?
Me too. But, you know, the best team doesn't always win. And for example, that's sort of part of the excitement. You look at the NCAA tournament, that's what people love. You know, the best team doesn't always win, and you can have a Cinderella. So, and I think it's good if you're a team like the Patriots, right? I mean, look at how bunched up the AFC is. Do you look at any team really in the AFC and say, well, you know, the Patriots have no shot against them? I mean, I know Kansas City at Kansas City would be tough, but I would not say no shot for the Patriots. So I think that it's good for teams that are, I don't want to say rebuilding, but retooling or transitioning, teams like the Patriots and the New Orleans Saints, who are in the mix and can potentially get a playoff spot if Jimmy G starts and can't deliver for the 49ers. The Saints could get in with the win over your Falcons. And so when you I had to sneak that in there.
Very good.
So I think it's good from that standpoint. But overall, I do agree with you. I've experienced a little bit of football
fatigue
this year. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, you know, a year ago tomorrow, it's, you know, a year ago today, Chris, where at least on the Saturday, we're sitting here, you know, starting to play some of the annoying Brady bits that I beat over everyone's head for a month straight. You know, it was, what was the Go Bucks Go, Go Bucks Go. Whatever the hell it was. You know, and you had that game against Washington football team and Vanilla Vic there. Tyler Heineke's running all over the place. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to lose this game. That's a year ago tomorrow.
Yeah.
We still got to get through this effing week, like before we get to the games that I want to see.
Have you seen some of the stuff on social media today? Like today is like the, you know, 11th anniversary or whatever of the Beastquake run. And
against the Saints.
It's
the
10th anniversary.
Because this is Wild Card Weekend.
Of like Demaryius Thomas catching that walk-off touchdown pass against the Steelers from Tim Tebow, because normally we're in the playoffs now. And yeah, now there's one more week. And I'll be honest with you, I think if the owners have their way, you know, this is not the end of the expansion of the regular season. I think it's inevitable that we get to 18 games.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way, and it affects the practice schedule, you know, and I think that's why you see so many injuries. I think that's why you see the Titans with, you know, them using 88 different players this year.
That's unbelievable.
And just as an aside, you know, we did the 10 questions with Greg Bedard, and it's like one of the questions was asked, who was the coach of the year? And I think for that reason alone, that the Titans are going to end up beating Houston tomorrow. They're going to end up being the one seed. They used 88 players this year, and they lost their MVP in, what was it, week 8, week 9? You know, it's Vrabel's year. And look, you can make a case for Bill. You can make a case
Zach
for
Taylor.
Zach Taylor. You can make a case for the guy that we rightfully ragged on at the beginning of the year in Philadelphia, in Nick Sirianni.
True.
Like, that guy, credit to him for turning that whole thing around.
Sean Payton, too.
Sean Payton as well. Yeah, that like, another team decimated by injuries and COVID, and how many quarterbacks have they used this year? Like, you can make a case for a lot of guys, but 88 different players. But that being said, to your point, with the AFC, is there one clear favorite?
No, there isn't.
You know, even the Titans, if they have the one seed, they hold on to it. What's their fatal flaw? Their quarterback. Like, do you really trust Ryan Tannehill with the money on the table? These last couple of years, he's bit them in the ass. At some point, you're going to have to throw the ball. You can only rely on Derrick Henry in that running game so much. And even in these games where they have been able to run the ball without Henry, where they're rushing for over 200 yards, well, they have four turnovers, like in the loss to the Patriots. Like, so they're flawed. I think Kansas City not having the one seed hurts them. I'm not convinced that Patrick Mahomes is like 100% right. Maybe that's a mental thing. Maybe it's that toe still.
Maybe it's the home life.
Right. Oh my God. That brother and that girlfriend. Fiance? Wife?
I don't know.
Either way. I mean, there was that one video that went viral a few months back where he's at some Mexican restaurant. It's been one of my favorite clips of 2021. Did you see this one? Where he's...
No.
They're at a Mexican restaurant with that pain-in-the-ass girl and that horrible brother. And I think it was the brother taking the video. And it pans to Patrick Mahomes, and he just is... He's just staring off like... I want to die. Yeah, so maybe it's the home life, but something's up there, and their defense, I think, is a little bit shaky, as proven last week against Cincinnati. You can throw all over them. So that's why, you know, look, at least for Patriots fans, you can make a case for them going on some kind of run here if they can get things right, because I do think it has been shaky since you and I have last done this show. In fact, I think the last show that we did, the last Gasper Murray, was the Saturday leading into that Saturday night game against Indianapolis. And then they hit that two-game skid coming out of the bye. Very uncharacteristic, but last time that this Patriots team lost a couple of games coming out of the bye, 2011, what happened there? They went to the Super Bowl. Lost it, but still. So we'll talk a little bit more about tomorrow's game. We have the contractual obligation of the Sports Up Celtics show in 45 minutes. We'll get to that.
A lot to talk about with the Celtics. There's a lot going on.
Oh, God, that team. Talk about one of the things that was a benefit of being away. I don't have to watch the Celtics and watch them make me miserable like they have to so many people around here lately. So we'll get to them coming up in about 45 minutes. But we'll talk a lot of Pats and the fact it should be wildcard weekend. Coming up here on Gasper Murray, you want to join us? Hey, what the hell? Make a phone call, won't you? 617-779-0985. Back after this.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Gasper and Big Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
Give me that which I desire.
It's Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I just wanted to start first lighthearted. Some of the players said yesterday that you gave the snow speech to them, and I was wondering, how does Bill Belichick keep himself accountable in terms of getting to work on time on a snow day?
Yeah, like everybody else, you just got to leave enough time and, you know, try to take the right steps and do the right thing. You know, I tried to come in early this morning and, you know, it was like took a half hour to go like 4 miles on Route 3. So you never know. But yeah, it's always an interesting, always interesting traveling in the snow. But it's part of New England, so you must just embrace it.
Yeah, embrace it. Bill's just like us, Guy. He knows how to deal with the snow. He's been here long enough. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Patriots head coach Bill Belichick talking about how he dealt with the snowy commute yesterday morning before the Patriots practiced and headed off to sunny, beautiful South Florida for tomorrow's game against the Dolphins. How do you think that they handle this, Chris? Is this, they're going to try to, are they going to play, all their starters for the whole 60 minutes? Is this going to be treated like a tune-up? I mean, it doesn't matter as much. Look, they're in, and good job this year. I do think that you can, for me, in my opinion, I think you can consider this a successful season. Would you like to see them, win a game here? Or maybe go on some kind of deep run, go to the conference championship? Of course. But for me, considering where they were last year, no answer at quarterback, Cam Newton, a rudderless ship, bad roster, the fact that they squeezed 7 wins out of that season, I think is kind of a minor miracle in of itself. But it didn't feel like they had a long-term plan here. But just like that, bang, feels like they're back. So, in my mind, successful season. But how do you think that they handle this game tomorrow?
I think they sort of handle it similar to the 2009 season finale, hopefully minus the crippling injury to your best receiver, which was Wes Welker
right,
down
Houston.
In Houston. But at that point, Bill sort of felt like it was important for the team to build confidence and momentum going into the playoffs. And I think it's the same thing. Go out there against an opponent that beat you in the season opener, that's beaten you the last 2 times you've played them, a team that's probably going to treat this game like it is their playoff game because they're out of the playoffs in the Miami Dolphins, and go out there and get battle tested. I think he's going to treat it that way. I don't think we're going to see what they did in 2015 where it's like, we don't really have a run game, or we don't have this. We need to work on these aspects. So we're just going to, go out there and use this game as a little bit of an experiment and see what happens. I don't think they're going to do that. I think that the messaging and everything is pointing towards it's the time of year where you need to be playing your best football. And I think that they want to go out there and start to put their best product back on the field because, they'll never admit this, but they know they're going to face a much better caliber of team than they faced last week in Jacksonville in the playoffs. And they know that part of that performance, it's not all them. Part of that is the futility of the opponent in Jacksonville.
So you and I, again, hadn't done this show since the Saturday leading into that Saturday night game against Indianapolis. They're riding high. They're coming off the bye. It feels at that point they are the one seed in the AFC. A lot has changed since then. So has your perspective changed on the team? Or do you feel like things came home to roost? This is what they really are.
I think it's closer to things came home to roost. This is what they really are in terms of, and I wrote about this in the Globe for Sunday, that they are a team that has a pretty specific formula for success. Like when the Patriots were winning championships, obviously the glory days, I thought one of their hallmarks was they could morph into whatever team they needed to be to win. Like defensive struggle, we got you. You want to light it up and we're going to go in a shootout, we got you. This team's different. They have like one path to winning, and that is to jump out early on their opponent and be able to run the football and let the defense make the other team one-dimensional and control the game. And I think Bill, sort of admitted this when they have the locker room video on Patriots.com, and he's speaking with the team after the Jacksonville game. And he's basically saying to them at that point that, this is the team that we need to be in terms of we need to jump out on top. We need to be the more physical team. We need to be a team that plays from ahead. And so I think that that sort of was a moment of unvarnished Belichick telling the team, like, this is how we have to play.
He said that verbatim. We got to play from being ahead.
No, this is what he said. Oh. Good job going out there and being the most physical team, staying in control of the game. That's what we got to do. That's what we are. That's what our commitment has got to be.
Yeah. Well, I would agree with you on this because I thought that was the most telling thing about those losses to Indianapolis and Buffalo, especially Indianapolis. When that game got to 14-0 after the block punt, I was like, oh, they're done. Because I think they're kind of front-runner-y, Chris. I do. And I think the quarterback is also part of that. Maybe that's just him being a rookie. You texted me at the time, and I was with you on this. I'm like, I know we're going to be accused of, you guys just don't like Mac anyway. It's the Jack Jones thing. No. The body language was not great.
The body language, yeah, was tough. I mean, I give Mac Jones a lot of credit.
So he bounced back and was good in the fourth quarter. He was the only player that was good in the fourth quarter.
He never taps out of a game.
Yeah.
Never. The kid is hyper-competitive, and I love that. He never taps out. He never gives up, and I like that about him. But I think that the noticeable difference in body language, and he's not the first quarterback with this. I mean, Brady became, you know, a little Marino diva-ish towards the end of his career. But the body language...
See how he acted in that Jets game last week? It's not great.
You know, but you can do some of that when you have pelts on the wall.
Sure.
But the body language with Mac when they're winning versus when they're losing is stark. For example, you know, I texted you last week about this. You know, he's doing like the majorette dance after he throws the touchdown to the wide-open Christian Wilkerson on a busted coverage by Jacksonville. But then when they get behind in some of these games, he's very sullen. He's very, like, sulky on the sidelines. Like, you can tell when it's not going well. And so I said this yesterday on Felger and Maz. I do think teams tend to take on a little bit of the personality of their quarterback. And I don't know if this traces back to his days at Alabama where they basically stomped on everybody. And, you know, you get on top of a team and everything's going well and you're throwing for a zillion yards. But I do think, to your point about them being kind of front-runnery, to me, Mac looks most at ease and seems to play his best in games where they are really in command and the game's not really close, like the Patriots are in control of the game, to use Bill's word, the whole way.
Yeah, I mean, look at some of the... So last week, I got to take with a grain of salt because of how bad that Jacksonville team is. That was... I mean, that's like amateur hour over there. But, you know, the Cleveland game, where I thought that was maybe his best game
of
the
year. He was great in that game.
After they tied it 7-7, so Cleveland scores first, 7-0. It's like, oh, okay, then they tie it, and then it was like off to the races. And he was very confident in that game. I think that was his best game of the year. So, yeah, I don't know. Remember that false start that he took? No, the delay of game early on in Indianapolis, too. And it's like, there was like 16 seconds left on the clock, and he just feels like rattled.
Yeah, towards the end of the half, yeah.
Like, what is going on here? So... Yeah, I think they got to get out to a lead on anyone or any of these good teams. I mean, 3-6 against playoff teams and contenders this year. That's kind of telling.
And 6 wins against teams that are set up to pick in the top 10 in the draft.
Yeah. So, look, if they were to make the conference championship, I think that's an extremely successful season. Do you agree with me, though, that it's already a successful season?
I do. It's a successful season because they're back in the playoffs and they found their quarterback. You know, they have a very viable option at quarterback. See, here's the thing. Here's a misconception. I don't hate Mac Jones, and he's definitely exceeded my expectations. But, you know, I started out sort of the baseline was Andy Dalton, who went 9-7 and made the playoffs as a rookie. So I'm telling you, the guy I'm comparing him to is a guy who made the playoffs as a rookie, won 9 games. Mac has won 10. Mac has thrown, 21 touchdown passes at this point to 12 picks.
Yeah.
Dalton in 16 games was 20 touchdowns to 13 picks. And Mac's had a better year than Dalton. I don't hate Mac Jones. I hate the reaction to Mac Jones.
Or
the overreaction to Mac Jones. The premature anointing of him as a top 10 quarterback, particularly when he plays well. And then the inconsistency in evaluating him where if he has a bad game, like Buffalo, it's, well, you know, he's a rookie. But if he lights it up against like Cleveland, it's like, well, he's already better than Matt Ryan and Ben Roethlisberger. And I know Roethlisberger, that's tough because he's on his last leg. You're talking about two guys that, you know, polar opposite ends of their careers. But it's like when he plays well, it's like, oh, my God, I would 100% take him over Matt Ryan. And why would you ever trade him for Russell Wilson? Like, oh, my God, you know, Brady 2.0. Then when he plays poorly, it's like, well, you know, he's a rookie. What do you expect? So there's just no consistency. So I don't hate Mac Jones. I just hate the discussion around Mac Jones and how wildly it is like political level insanity and bias when we discuss the quarterback around here.
Indeed. Yeah. It's madness.
Cultish.
That's why I feel the need to push back on it a little bit.
I agree.
No beef
yeah, me
with
too.
Him. I think he's a good kid.
I like his competitive streak.
Yeah. Competitiveness, the toughness, you know, I think the smarts, all of that.
But great accuracy.
Pump the brakes a little bit, especially when it comes to the Brady comparisons, and it's that like there he can do no wrong.
He can do no wrong.
It's baked in. Like anytime he has a bad game, well, what do you expect? He's a rookie. It's like no, like you can't have one narrative and ride that
yes.
train and then hop off when it doesn't go well.
Yeah,
for him, you know? 100%.
And you know the other thing I would say, what I also like about Mac Jones, and this fits the Patriots really well, is that you know Bill always says the first step is to winning in the game is not losing it. And I know Mac Jones comes from a tennis background with his family. Mac Jones doesn't make a lot of unforced errors. You know, he'll make mistakes, but normally it's the other team. They pressure him into it. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes on his own like a lot of young quarterbacks do. And I really like that about him. So, I mean, again, I don't hate Mac Jones. I actually kind of like him. I'd really like him more if you guys just stop talking about it.
Well, one thing I think that we can say is kind of a lock with Mac Jones. I think he's better than the quarterback you're going to see tomorrow on the opposition.
Yeah, I would agree. Although they're a little more similar than people think, but Mac, I'd definitely rather have Mac, and Mac's better.
All right, when we come back, Chris, I want your answer as to who the Patriots should want to face in the wild card round, whether that's the Buffalo Bills or the Cincinnati Bengals, because it feels like with the Bengals not playing a lot of their starters tomorrow, they're setting up to almost feel like they want to see the Patriots next weekend, even though it should be this weekend because we agree that we don't like the extra game. This should be wild card weekend. We'll get to that with your phone calls coming up next here on Gasper Murray.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Overall thoughts, you just want to answer?
Yeah. You know, just... really proud.
Why is this moment so emotional for you?
Well, I think you guys have just sat in here and seen what we've been through, you know.
That is a over-emotional dollar store Sean McVay, head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, Zach Taylor, getting all choked up because the Bengals won the division for the first time since 2015. Yay, let's get choked up over mediocrity. I thought that was such a bad look for him in that team. Hey, like, good, congrats. And, you know, you lose your number one draft pick last year in Joe Burrow, and he's got this catastrophic knee injury, and he bounces back, and he looks like an absolute stud this year. You made the right pick with Jamar Chase. Like, the offense looks legit. They have real weapons there. But, I don't know, for that kind of reaction, isn't the reaction supposed to be, Chris, and it's Gasper Murray here on 98.5 Sports, of, hey, that's great, but we feel like we haven't accomplished what we really are setting out to do. There's more to be done. We all start even like everybody else in the playoffs, and we're, you know, we want to try to push forward. Like, that kind of emotional reaction to winning the division, it's just, to me, that's one of the reasons I think if you're a Patriots and a Patriots fan, give me Cincinnati next week.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you on that, even though you look at it on paper, right, and say, okay, Cincinnati has some of the components that give the Patriots a hard time in terms of they have depth in their passing game. There's three really good receivers there in Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd. And normally if you're going to beat the Patriots, it's not going to be your main guy, though Stephon Diggs has success against them, but it's going to be the second option, the third option, a sort of CeeDee Lamb theory, right? You'd say that's not ideal. However, Burrow will turn the football over. He's up there in interceptions. He's still a young quarterback. I think Belichick could confuse him, flummox him, baffle him, whatever you want to say. And then just that reaction from Zach Taylor, you get the idea that, you know, the Bengals would sort of psych themselves out, and that there's also maybe another component of we feel like we've already accomplished something and we're just happy to be here.
Yeah, I think that they're a year or so away. I think, you know, Burrow and that offense is legit. But, yeah, they just feel wound too tight. That historical loser that just drips from that franchise, too. You know, we were talking about this stat this week on Felger and Mez. They haven't won a playoff game since 1990.
1990. That's unbelievable.
0-8 in the playoffs. Boomer Esiason was the quarterback then. I mean, it's 31 years ago, right? Like, that's insane. 31 years ago. Like, they are such losers. Like, it's just they're not ready yet. And I think that they would be still even wound up from the videotaping scandal, if you want to call it that, from 2019 that Zach Taylor was all pissed off about. And it's just that the unfamiliarity thing, like Joe Burrow, as good as he is, I think, like, you know, look at the success that Bill Belichick has had against young quarterbacks in this league and what he's done to someone like Justin Herbert. I could see that same thing repeating itself with Joe Burrow. you know, the familiarity with Buffalo. I think the pressure would be on Buffalo. You got to go to Buffalo and play them.
It's a good point.
So there's some things, there's some reasons why I think he would want the Bills too. But I will say, again, it's our first show in weeks, and we weren't able to talk about that game in particular. I didn't think Buffalo had that in them, Chris. I thought that they were mentally destroyed after that game on December 6th in Buffalo with the windy conditions where they only have Mac Jones throwing three times. The reaction of Sean McDermott after that game, their safeties. I was like, oh, this team's done. And if they miss the playoffs, no one should be surprised. They've bounced back, and they came into Foxborough, and that game wasn't as even close as the final score indicated. If they connected on the 4th-and-1 to Emmanuel Sanders, and then that other one where Josh Allen rolls out to the left, who is that?
Jake Kumerow? Yeah.
That game's a blowout, Chris. Like, they blow the Patriots off their home field. So they showed me a lot, and the quarterback showed me a lot in that game.
He did. Now, he came back in typical Josh Allen fashion and played a terrible game against the Falcons.
Three picks against the Falcons last week.
Awful, like throwing back across his body and all this other stuff, and, you know. But, no, I agree. And Josh Allen's played well against the Patriots the last couple of times out. The one thing, you know, when I look at Buffalo, I feel like the Patriots mystique is not a thing for them anymore, where it would be, I think, for Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati with Burrow and a younger team that probably grew up, now I'm playing psychologist here, but the younger team that grew up watching the Patriots, seeing Belichick, I think they might be a little psyched out. Whereas Buffalo is like, okay, this is our rival now. We hate these guys, but we can beat them. But I think Buffalo walks into the game feeling like we're the better team. Whereas Cincinnati, I think, walks into the game maybe thinking they're the better team, but also like, oh, my God, we're in the playoffs and we're facing the Patriots and Bill Belichick. You know what I mean? So yeah. I think I'd rather see the Patriots face Cincinnati. You asked me earlier in the show, how do I feel about the Patriots? I'm going to be honest with you. The two-game losing streak didn't really change how I felt about them at all. I still think they can make some noise in the playoffs. And if you're asking me today what I expect them to win one playoff game. Now, if they don't do that, I'm not going to condemn them and say it wasn't a successful season. I've already declared, like you have, it was. But my expectations for the playoffs, I expect them to win a playoff game. I really do.
Yeah, you know? Same. Yeah. And, you know, I think they're going to be a tough out. I think
absolutely.
Even in that divisional round, they'll
no
be
one
a
wants
tough
to
out.
Play the Patriots.
No.
They're like the Temple with John Chaney or like Syracuse with the 2-3 zone and Jim Boeheim. They're like that sort of team. Going into the playoffs, like nobody wants to face the Patriots and Bill Belichick and this defense because they know it's going to be a grind.
Yeah, you're not. This isn't going to be if they're to lose, even if they lose next week. It's not. You're not going to see a, you know, like that Ravens curb stomping in 2009. You know that wild card round here where that's like an aging team that's you know they. It's not that like you're going to get it. They're gonna be a tough out. Like if they're going to lose a game, I think it's going to be within 6-7 points, something like that. Let's go to Sam in the car first up here on Gasper Murray this morning on those very Cincinnati Bengals. Hey, Sam. You bring them up.
The comp of the Bengals because I feel like they're going to be amazing, you know, down the line. But they remind me of like 91, 92 Dallas Cowboys, lots of firepower, but didn't know how to put it together. They lost in the playoffs, Cowboys did. To the Lions 1 year and then the Bears another year before they put it all together. So I am 100% confident the Patriots are going to go in there and wipe the floor with them.
Yeah, Sam, it just feels like they're a year or so away. That offensive line is also wretched. You know, I think they're tied. I know they are. They're tied for second in the league for giving up the most sacks.
51 sacks. Yeah. Burrow's been sacked 51 times.
And their secondary is meh. So, like, all the pieces aren't there yet. I'll agree with them, though. Like, the firepower is there. There's a ton of building blocks. And at the very least, they're fun as hell to watch. It's a shame that they're, like, the Bengals. Like, who the hell wants to kind of, like, sneaky root for the Bengals? It's tough because of just, again, the institutional loserdom that drips from that franchise. But, I don't know, just as a neutral observer, they're kind of fun as hell to watch.
They are fun.
I like the moxie of Burrow, too. There's just the right amount of cockiness.
Yeah,
there.
Burrow is the type of player Baker Mayfield thinks he is.
That's a good way to
put
it.
So yeah. It's like, you know, and that's always what's driven me nuts about Baker Mayfield is like, the you know, people say his moxie and swag and, you know, whatever. And it's like, yeah, but it's like undue to the, you know, his talent. Whereas Burrow has it, it's legit.
Yeah.
It's legit and you can see it. So, yeah, exactly.
All right, well, let's do the old, we haven't done this in a while, Chris, the old NFL assault coming up.
Oh, NFL ambush?
The NFL ambush.
Oh,
I want your thoughts on just some overall big picture things from the year, you know, league MVP, who you like, you know, winning the Super Bowl, who do you think is going to be there at the end, things of that nature, including The meltdown of one Antonio Brown, and as that thing continues to devolve by the day, we'll get to all that coming up in our long commercial-free segment, which will segue into the Sports Hub Celtics show at noon. A lot to talk about with that team, of course, here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
It's Gasper and Murray.
I'm drunk, you're gross, let's go.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
If Tom Brady's my boy, why am I playing for an earnest salary?
Right.
You my boy, though, right?
Right.
Gronkowski is boy, right?
Right.
How much did he get paid?
Significant amount.
Damn. All right, so why is AB on a prove-it deal? Who's better than me over there? Let's be real.
Right, but don't
no,
you...
No, 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 let's not be right. Let's be honest.
No, I'll
it's
be
the
real.
Podcast
I'll be real.
To be real.
No, right? I'll be real.
Who
AB
is the best guy over there?
AB.
Since you guys know football, who
for
is
sure,
it?
For sure,
who's
AB.
The best guy over at that team?
No, man, AB.
Football, receiver-wise, who is the
AB.
Guy that get it popping?
It's
I
AB.
Mean, I think it's a combination of all you guys. I think it was AB.
It's a combination now.
Dude, I've always said...
The answer is Chris Godwin, you bum. And whoever those ass kissers were on whatever dumb podcast that is that Antonio Brown appeared on yesterday. And this thing has since gone viral. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5, the sports hub here. Antonio Brown, and I will say, in hilarious fashion, I'm not that big of a stiff that I didn't enjoy watching that meltdown. It was very entertaining. It was seeing him meltdown at MetLife Stadium last Sunday where the jersey comes off and everyone's like, what the hell is happening here? Well, it's a now a he said she said type of story, or he said between he and Bruce Arians and the team. Given Antonio Brown's history, Chris, I believe the team and the organization. Not something I typically do. I usually 99.9% of the time side with the player, but Antonio Brown, and I'm being kind here, is a unique case. Was he, you know, is he banged up? Yeah, did he put in the effort to come back and heal correctly? I don't know. I have my doubts considering it's been a couple of months. And look, Brady, Arians, but Brady specifically, reap what you sow here, man. Like, this is what you get.
I agree.
When you trust a rattlesnake, and you can't trust a rattlesnake, and I think that's what Antonio Brown is. I think he's a sociopath, bad guy. I think it's, look, and I know, like, well, he's never been the same since the Vontaze Burfict hit, and you don't know what he's going through. Chris, I'm just of the belief, look, I take mental health very seriously, and when it comes to people like professional athletes like your Josh Gordons, or Delonte West, like people that are self-inflicting their wounds. And like I have the utmost sympathy and empathy for players like that. Antonio Brown, there's some people, Chris, some people are just bad people and bad guys. I think Antonio Brown's a bad guy. I do. And so I don't have much sympathy for him and how this situation has devolved. But also Brady, too. You're complicit in this. I'm glad that he was part of that ride last year.
Yep.
And, you know, it was,
got a Super Bowl out of
fire
it.
The cannons and getting that Super Bowl and all that. But this, you shouldn't have brought him back.
No.
It sucks that he was as much of a part of their offensive game plan as he has been this year. Now it feels like, unfortunately, they're kind of screwed without him, considering all the injuries like Godwin being out for the rest of the year. But, you know, Brady's got egg on his face, and rightfully so, because you shouldn't have brought this guy back in the first place. You shouldn't have trusted Antonio Brown.
No, you shouldn't have, and you shouldn't have given him your stamp of approval and gone to bat for him. I'll say a couple of things on this. One, you know, now... You know, AB is really sort of crossing over into embarrassing and hurting Brady because he took a shot at his body coach, Guerrero, you know, with the $100,000. And he is basically also, you know, ripping Brady's, you know, brand apart. He's taking shots now at Brady's brand in terms of TB12 by going after Guerrero and also sort of the idea of Tom, you know, being invested in him. And he's basically saying, well, it was just football. So this is bad. This is egg, as you said, on Brady's face. And you know what my takeaway is when I look at it overall? If Tom Brady or Bill Belichick is still upset or angry or resentful over the fact that the Crafts basically said enough with this fool and told them they had to get rid of Antonio Brown in 2019, well, you shouldn't feel that way anymore because they were right. They were right. And
right.
Remember,
they were ultimately, Chris, the only franchise that handled this guy correctly.
Correct. and kudos to the Crafts on that. And he always, on his way out the door, I mean, this guy burns bridges like no other. Because remember how he went after the Crafts after he left here?
Yeah.
And he's doing the same thing to Brady. So you thought he wasn't going to do it to you?
He did it to Roethlisberger when he left, and he burned the bridge in Pittsburgh. He did it to Mike Mayock.
Mike Mayock. He tried to say Mike Mayock was a racist.
Yeah, with Oakland, the then Oakland Raiders. He has now done it to Brady and the Bucks, and he did it, of course, to the Patriots. Like I said, when he was basically here for 1 week.
Yeah.
The guy's got a track record, and, you know, it sucks for Brady, but again, you shouldn't have latched onto this guy in the first place.
No, you shouldn't have.
This is what you get.
You know, you and I both get accused of being Brady Bobos, and there's some truth to that.
For sure.
But I'll say this about Tom. Tom is very similar to Bill in terms of the win by any means necessary thing. It's just he puts a much, you know, prettier, more acceptable face on it. Like, he's not gruff and grumpy, and so people don't see it the same way, but Tom is very much sort of a, like, look the other way to try and win guy. You know, the ends justify the means, like Belichick. And this is the only reason he was invested in Antonio Brown like this. And I think Brady's the reason that Antonio Brown didn't get booted from the team after the whole fake vaccination card thing. I think if Chris Godwin is healthy, that they say, no, that, you know, we're going to get rid of this guy. We said he was one and done in terms of chances, but I think Brady convinced them otherwise, and it is now blown up in Tom Brady's face.
All right, so with that, let's segue into the NFL ambush, as you like to call it,
yes.
And we'll just run through some of these quick topics
league-wide.
But starting with the Bucs and their playoff hopes, are you like me and think that they're going to just be one and done?
One and done, one win and done, or one game and done?
Either or.
Really?
Yeah.
I think they're one win and done. I think they're like the Patriots. I think, you know, one win and it's over. I think they'll get one win. Now, look, it's hard to gauge because it depends sort of on the matchups, but I think they're one win and done probably, right? Now, they're so banged up. The secondary's not great. You know, who's Tom really throwing to at this point? You know, the Cyril Grayson guy is a great story, but Tyler Johnson hasn't had a great year for them. Breshad Perryman is another guy they're using. You know, Gronk is 17 games. I think that's a lot to ask of him. Their running backs are all banged up. Like, Le'Veon Bell plays for them and is going to play significant snaps tomorrow because they're so banged up at running back.
Leonard Fournette's their second leading receiver.
It's insane.
That's insane. So it sounds like he might not be back with that hamstring injury. Not just the secondary's banged up. Up front, they're banged up defensively.
Yeah.
And, you know, JPP.
Pierre Paul.
Yeah, JPP's barely played. That's a team. And I know, who cares, you Brady Bobos? But, like, just, again, just looking at it objectively, you want to look at a team like the Titans that have kind of lost the war of attrition, but at least the Titans are now getting guys back like Derrick Henry. The Bucs have just been, like, decimated by injury. And it's, you know how tough it is to repeat anyway. Like, I didn't think that they would as this season has gone along. Look, at the beginning of the season, they're bringing everyone back. Like, holy crap, they might go unbeaten. Whew, oh, boy, that was dumb. Yeah, if they just won a game... or even if they lost their first round, depending on who they're going to get matched up against, like you said, Chris, I think that's it. They just feel like that's a team that's running on fumes. Who do you like? Who do you think the Super Bowl is going to be?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Wow, you're catching me off guard there. I would say I'm going to go Chiefs out of the AFC, and then out of the NFC, tough. This is less sort of objective football analysis and maybe a little bit more emotion sort of tying into this. I'm going to go Chiefs-Dallas. I think that Trayvon Diggs' son is going to have a very confusing Super Bowl between Patrick Mahomes and Dak Prescott. And anybody who's seen that knows what I'm talking about. I like the Cowboys. They have a ton of talent. The coaching isn't great, but Dan Quinn has gotten a lot out of that defense and the way they turn the football over, and they have a ton of weapons there, even though they just lost Michael Gallup. But I think Dak Prescott has had a really good season, and I'll go Chiefs-Cowboys.
Yeah, I want to try to make a case for the Cowboys, but again, the coaching, Matt McCarthy, I think gets in the way there, and I think they're really inconsistent offensively. I couldn't believe that they lost last week to Arizona. So it does feel like, to me, it's Green Bay's year. I want to say Green Bay's there, but Aaron Rodgers, I think, is going to end up winning the MVP, and you know how that curse goes. Like, you win the MVP, you ain't winning the Super Bowl. But I think Green Bay Chiefs, I do. I still think
you see that.
Kansas City is going to get through. I think they are hurt by not having the one seed, but it sounds like there's some trepidation in your voice, and the same with mine. Like, I don't feel great about that. Like, I don't think that there's one clear favorite really in either conference.
Like, I'll be honest with you, and this is like a weird one probably to say, but like if the Bills came out of the AFC, like, I would be shocked.
If the Rams came out of the NFC, I wouldn't be shocked. And I think Matt Stafford still is Matt Stafford and stinks.
So that's why I'm not picking them, because I think when push comes to shove and the money's on the table, Matt Stafford still reveals himself as being less than a truly elite Hall of Fame type of quarterback. But again, you know, who knows? If Matt Stafford went out and had a Joe Flacco-like postseason, would I be shocked? Nope. I mean, that's the way this year has been.
Quick answers on these three things. MVP, Coach of the Year, who's the Offensive Rookie of the Year in the AFC?
All right. So I would say MVP, I'm going to go with Brady. And it's not the Bobo factor. I think you do have to take into account what he's doing at his age. He's throwing more passes than anyone. I know he has, you know, 12 interceptions, and Rodgers has, what, 4 or 5?
More touchdowns.
But he has more touchdowns. He's taken fewer sacks than Rodgers. And I just named some of the guys. He's like, he threw game-winning touchdown passes to Breshad Perriman and Cyril Grayson. For me, and then they have no running game. No running game there. Whereas Rodgers, they do have a solid running game with Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. So I think Rodgers will win it, but I think Brady should win it. You know, Coach of the Year, I'll go with Vrabel, just what he's been able to do, the time missed by not only Derrick Henry, but the time missed by A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, who was supposed to be a big piece of this thing. So I'll go with Mike Vrabel, especially if they get the number one seed. Offensive Rookie of the Year, give me a little time on this one to explain. I'm going to go with Chase, and that's not an anti-Mac Jones thing, but the argument that I've come to the last couple of days is this. Jamar Chase is one of the 10 best receivers in the league, regardless of rookie, 10th year, whatever. Is Mac Jones one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the league? Like, you can make the argument, but I mean, indisputably.
No.
No. So I think, you know, again, people look at Mac Jones and they say, well, for a rookie, he's having a great season. Correct. Jamar Chase is having a great season for any receiver who, you know, plays in the NFL. That's why I go Chase. Defensive Rookie of the Year, I think it's Micah Parsons.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, he could win Defensive Player of the Year, too.
Like, I think T.J. Watt will win at this point, especially if he gets Strahan's sack record. But he could. He's very legitimately in that.
Chase is a freak, man. Like, that, not only just that 3rd and 27. Did you see the one in particular last week against the Chiefs where he outran 7 defenders?
Yeah, but it was like a nothing throw. I said this on the air. I was like, that's the type of, like, in-cut they throw to Jacoby Myers, and Jacoby Myers, like, stumbles forward for 3 yards. Right. And Jamar Chase, like, turned that into a, what, 60-something-yard touchdown?
Insane.
It was unbelievable the way he pulled away.
Quickly, John in Atlanta on Bruce Arians before we get into the Sports Hub Celtics show. Go ahead, John.
Hey, guys. Quick question. I don't think that Bruce Arians is getting nearly enough grief. One, he really needs another ring to have any chance at Canton, so he has so much at risk. To me, it's like arguing with your prom queen date a week before the prom. It's like, don't do it. Let the AB stay on the bench. You need him for the playoffs for a deep run. Just put up with it and so that you can have a run. Otherwise, you blow it up, ruin the season. I'm surprised Tom Brady just isn't pulling his hair out, you know, because Arians blew it up. I look forward to your take. Thank you. Have a great week. And, you know, love from the Atlanta Patriots fan club.
Thanks, John. Always good to hear from you. So let me give you this. I think I can share this because Jay Stu, who's plugged in with the Brady camp, and I think this is to be trusted, he gets good intel even with Brady down in Tampa, texted this to me the other night. And it's in quotes, so I know this popped up on Jay Stu's phone. Tom gets frustrated with BA. He won't ever say it publicly now, but he privately appreciates the structure Bill has in regards to the command of the coaches and players. Doesn't always make it a fun place to be, but the end goal is to win on Sunday. Tom has had to make up for a lot of what BA doesn't do during the week on the fly.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.